you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, you're listening to SupDoc. I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen.
And this is a show where we talk to interesting people with strong opinions about their favorite documentaries.
On today's episode, we review Finding Vivian Maier, the 2013 documentary from director John Maloof that follows a very private photographer, Vivian Maier.
And we sit down with comedian and basically the best laugher in the game, Esther Koo. So we are here with our illustrious comedian, actor, guest, Esther Koo.
What's up? Thanks for having me.
From the podcast Koo and the Gang.
That's right.
And watching Koo. My Poo with Koo.
And the Gang.
And the Gang. Yeah.
And recently you're here for, you have another gig out here.
Yeah, man.
Can you tell us about that or what?
I guess so.
Sweet, do it.
Yeah. Oh, I just got to do a voiceover on Family Guy.
Never heard of it.
It's a documentary about this guy. He's really fat.
From Massapequa, Rhode Island.
Yeah, and he's just a loser, and he runs into all these problems. It's really funny. You should check it out.
Yeah, I've watched a little bit of that doc. It's Brian, right? He has a son named Brian and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. But that's how was it? Did you already do it, or you about to do it?
I already did it.
And
it was awesome.
And what did Seth MacFarlane ask about me? Did he bring me up at all?
He was wondering when you're going to do an episode about his documentary.
Oh, does he have one?
Family Guy,
Oh, it's called Family Guy, right. That's right. We'll have him on soon.
I like that it's like the Up series, but it's just Family Guy.
Right,
it's like
right.
Peter Griffin is a seven-year-old.
Michael Apted's Family Guy.
I'll call the three Fs.
Yeah.
Never mind. So you're here, and you normally live in Miami.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's a traditional Miami accent.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, man.
Well, I just got back from Chumai. Come on.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Was that where you got your pot shirt?
No, I actually got this in Miami. But it's like I buy all these clothes where like because it's so hot that I know how to dress for this weather this week. It's so hot here this week because of the fire.
It's brutal.
Oh yeah, the fire.
Is it because of the fire?
No, I think the fire is because it's hot. I don't think it's hot because of the fire, but...
I heard it was a bunch of teenagers who started it.
Really?
Probably.
They went camping and left a campfire on.
It's like an 80s movie.
Ugh. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I drove by. I did too. It looked like a volcano. I literally thought we had a volcano.
I was just driving here on Friday from San Francisco, and on I-5 in the Grapevine was a giant accident. So it had these signs were saying, accident, 3-hour delay. So they had a detour that went around the Grapevine and then right next to the fire. So, like... We were driving on the highway, and the fire was, like, right off the side of the highway. It was crazy.
Wow.
I know this is fascinating, but I must have gotten there about an hour before you because the I-5 was at a standstill, but I was eventually able to get past all of that to get to the actual. I didn't have to get off of the 5. You got off of the 5.
I got off of the 5 onto, like, highway... California South 132 or something, random.
I think Waze was telling me to do that, but I'm like, I think I'm going to write it out, and then so you drove right by the actual fire.
It was like, you know how they say licking? Like, the fire was licking right off the...
Licking?
Yeah, that's hot. I know, it's hot.
Wow.
But it was like licking right off, it was like right off the highway. I mean, it was like right there. It was crazy. It was weird. It seemed apocalyptic. I thought it was either Trump or Pokemon Go was the cause.
Right.
I was thinking one of the two. But is that so? That's what you heard. Were teenagers?
That's what I heard. I don't know.
Stupid teenagers.
It's true, but it sounds plausible.
I know the sky has been pretty incredible, though.
It's been very red.
Yeah, and it's been very hot here in delightful downtown, beautiful Glendale.
Now, you started doing comedy in Miami?
No, in Boston.
In Boston.
I rub the East Coast up and down, baby.
Yeah.
Well, what they say about Florida? It is Miami. It is. The Wang of America.
I'm all up in that 95, bitch. You know, from Maine down to Florida.
Is that a highway?
You don't, yeah.
I thought you were just referring to the year 1995.
I did too.
And I was going back to like,
95
oh, 12
North,
Monkeys came out. And okay, yeah. And so you started in Boston. Did you go to school there or what were you doing in Boston?
No, I just was doing stand-up there.
Mm-hmm.
I started stand-up there because I read in a book that Boston has one of the best comedy scenes in the country. So I was like, well, I guess I'm going to Boston. I want to do comedy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But you grew up, where did you grow up?
Chicago.
Chicago. Uh-huh. Okay. Which I think might tie into this topic for this film, possibly.
Yes.
You're right.
Because we are talking about Finding Vivian Mayer, which...
Meyer.
Did I say Mayer?
Yeah, yes. You said Mayer.
You're right. Meyer.
Bill Mayer.
Bill Mayer, exactly. John Mayer, who's, I'm a big fan of.
John Mayer, you mean.
Yeah. So, yeah,
John
this,
Oscar
this
Mayer
takes
Wiener.
Place basically out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and you can hear all the delightful hard tea Chicago accents in this documentary, a lot of them. Like, oh, my God, that time, you know, he was standing
okay,
there.
Okay, that's like Minnesota. You're oh exaggerating a little bit.
That is Chicago. That's northern Chicago. But, so, what did you think? What did you think about this?
The movie?
Yeah.
Wait, that's all we're going to talk about me?
No.
It's going to be a lot of talk about the fire, then a highway we don't know.
Oh, my God.
And then...
You should have given
straight
me
in
the
movie.
Light. I didn't know it was going to be so short.
No, well, at first
I
you
have
seemed
wasted
reluctant.
My time on the fucking fire.
Yeah.
The Great Chicago Fire. What about that? What were you in the Great Chicago Fire?
It was started
fire,
by man. Mrs. O'Leary and her cow in the barn.
What about the molasses thing? Yeah. Was that Chicago? Do you know?
I don't even know what that
the
is.
The huge molasses disaster. Do you remember this?
No.
It was like a molasses factory. I don't remember what city it was. I wanted to say it was Chicago, but like literally like... Like it exploded, and then just molasses was like pouring down the streets. But it had like, you know, dead animals and people trapped inside of it.
Whoa!
Yeah.
The Great Molasses Spill.
There must be a documentary about that.
There
that
should be.
That
it might be
spill.
It's pre, yeah.
It's probably the slowest spill in of a natural. You know, like it's molasses. So
yeah,
it's
you could get moves, out of the way.
Yeah, you could get out of the way
so
pretty.
So people
late.
Who got caught in it
are just
dumb.
Slow moving, yeah. Dumb drunks. Getting caught by
or
the
molasses.
Or
maybe handicapped people.
Well, that is true too. Yeah. They do need some extra time. they do need a little extra time, but so
I didn't make this up. I just want you to know I did not make up.
So, but you picked this documentary, and so why? Why did you pick it? Why are we talking about it?
Why? I guess I was on Netflix one night, and I just started perusing documentaries, and I saw the description, and I thought I'd check it out.
Nice.
Yeah.
And
it was a fascinating documentary about this woman who is a nanny.
Right.
And, but she loved taking pictures and she was sort of a loner artist type, but nobody discovered her work. People didn't discover her work until after she died.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
you
nuts.
Didn't watch it, did you?
I don't. I have no
Paco's
idea what you're talking about.
Face is so blank right now.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I just had all these thoughts coming to my head when you were saying that. But yeah, so she's a nanny. She, as it turns out, now regarded as one of the greatest 20th century photographers, which is
fucking
nuts.
She's an amazing photographer.
Yeah.
But she never really pursued photography. She had boxes upon boxes of film, an undeveloped film in her storage unit. And the guy who made the documentary is just somebody who like is one of those storage guys.
Storage Wars guys, yeah.
Yeah, and he just does that for a living, discovered this whole storage unit full of the most amazing photographs taken by this woman who lived a very modest life. And she could have been probably wealthy had she marketed herself or had she submitted her photos to a magazine, to Time. I'm sure Time magazine would have printed them.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and Photography Now.
Yeah.
Those guys.
She could have gotten her art out there so much sooner than when she hit the graveyard, but...
That is true. That is so... So let me ask you this, Ku. Have you ever had a storage locker?
I have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The first 10 minutes of this movie was just like, oh, this is going to be all about hoarding. I'm all excited about that part.
So what? Do you still have it?
No. Okay. You know what? I finally cleaned it out and I finally got rid of my storage unit.
Gotcha.
And it just felt great because every time I went to New York, I would do a little work on it and go through all my shit and throw away stuff and donate stuff that I don't really need.
If you were to have forgotten about it and like 10 years later, someone buys it, And would have gone through your shit, what would have been like the most embarrassing thing that they would have found that was in that storage locker?
Probably my diaries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That would do it. Yeah.
My journals.
Oh, that man.
Embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that.
You keeping good journals throughout like high school, college? Or?
Not high school, but I started more when I was in Boston.
Of keeping a journal?
Yeah.
So when you first moved there?
Off and on.
You're like, dear diary, I took the tea. To the Red Sox
game. But I wouldn't write dear diary. I'd be like, dear me. Like, what the fuck?
Wait, let me ask you this. Do you write in your diary, do you write in first person or third person?
First person.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I write in third person.
You do?
Yeah. I don't say Paco
You're
did.
Just that much more of a narcissist than I am.
I like to call an artist, but yeah, I think I am.
It's abbreviation.
I like to think I'm writing it to someone, though.
Second person would be the weirdest.
Yeah, that would be strange.
You are looking at my diary.
Yeah. Did you ever have a diary, George?
I've written things down. What I realized is that I only wrote things when I was like really bummed out. So I never went back and read it because it's like, well, this just reminds me of all these times I was super bummed out. I never had a thing of like write about when things are going well.
Yeah.
So I just
no. You only write about when you're bummed out.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like it's terrible in that way.
Or super excited about something.
Super like, excited. Yeah. Like I just had the best night ever. Here's what I did. Yeah. I went to, and then you talk about like I do that.
Yeah.
I record the good moments too.
Yeah, a little bit. My favorite is,
I started from the bad moments.
I like when sometimes I kept as soon as I moved to San Francisco, I started keeping a journal, and there was times when I would be like, okay, I'll be writing about something. I'll be like, I'll be right back. I would tell my journal that I'd be right back. Like I would
BRB.
I'll be right back. And then like it'd be like September 2007, and the next entry would be like October 2010.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, like, no, me too. I wasn't religious about it.
Yeah, no, you can't be too religious.
Were you keeping your notes for your stand-up in the same journal?
Yeah.
So you kind of, do you do the same thing? Do you have like a stand-up journal?
I sure do.
Where you kind of like things that just happen get mixed in there?
I had a performance journal that after any set, I would go back home and write if it was good, bad, what I could do better, that kind of shit. I stopped doing that. I should probably do that. But
I know. When you start out, you have such good work ethic.
You do.
Right?
You're so interested.
I write everything down. But now it's just, I just write a phrase and that's my whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Or maybe just think about it. I might just think about it on the bus.
I got one of those moleskins because I saw other comics had moleskins. So I just was like, yeah, that's what I'm going to need.
Yeah.
No, that's totally gone by the wayside.
Have you guys ever dabbled in photography, Esther?
No. I've always wanted to, though. Like, I wish I would have signed that. Whenever, like, I picked my electives for high school,
right.
I always looked at photography and art like, oh, I wish I could do that. But I feel like I have to take these AP classes to get these credits out of the way for college.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just, like, such a in workaholic mode, I guess.
Uh-huh. Gotcha.
You're Asian, right? That's part of
it. I wish I would have taken a photography class. Like, that would have been so much fun.
But where did you go to college? You went to, I forget.
U of I.
Oh, yeah,
Champaign. Okay.
You didn't take photography classes in
U of I. No, I wish I had. Like that, you know, but also the photography teacher, I think the art teachers at our school, they were kind of known as like perverty.
Oh,
like they would get gropey with the students.
Oh, Jesus.
So maybe that's why I didn't.
Perverty and gropey.
Maybe that's why I
no
didn't
wonder you went into comedy.
Sign up for his class.
Yeah. What about you, George? You ever?
Groped? No. By a teacher?
Been groped.
No, never groped by a teacher.
By Paco.
Never groped by Paco.
Not yet.
No, I took a. Well, yeah. There's always.
That's how you got the co-host job.
Oh, boy. just active harassment on the mic.
Wait, you don't tell your listeners that you're groping him right now?
No, they don't know.
Oh.
It's not a three-way. Like, if you'd like to be groped, please email Paco at SupDocPodcast.
groping69.
I took like junior high, I took a black and white photography class, and we had to do the developing. And I thought I would be great at it. And I just was like, whatever, very blasé. Not really. I couldn't even wrap my head around all the chemical stuff. And that's a lot of what it was back then. I mean, I think what's cool about this in a way, she's like, they reference that. She's not, Vivian Meyer's not great at printmaking, but she is like, just has such a good eye. Her negatives are great. I wish I'd gone more into it. I'm actually, photography is a genre.
She just needed an assistant.
Right, yeah.
Had she found herself an assistant, she would have been a worldwide, world-renowned photographer before she died.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the question is like what were her intentions with her work? And like, did she want attention? Was she doing this as part of a a documentation for herself. Like, it's a little bit unclear. We get to some point in the movie where it's revealed a little bit more what some of her intentions are.
Yeah. I think it's probably what makes this so compelling. It's like, it'd be one thing if she was a photographer of like little renown. Mm-hmm. But the fact that she was completely unknown until after her death
makes it so fascinating.
Especially in today's world. Like, she didn't die that long ago.
Yeah. I was thinking about how, like, basically, like, there could not be a situation like this now, because almost the opposite is the case. It's like someone who has no talent in photography but has a huge Instagram account. It's like all about the sharing. The sharing is now, I think, bigger deal. Like, the getting the socials and the numbers is a bigger deal than the content itself, for things now. So, yeah, it's, like, hard to picture. And also, like, just this whole era of even getting, like, Super 8 film developed, that's like a whole process in and of itself. Like, getting your film developed, getting all that stuff. Yeah. Like, the fact that, so the guy who finds all the stuff, I want to say his name is John
Maloof.
He starts off, he grew up in a family where they were like going to storage lockers, buying stuff. He just saw that there were negatives in this case, decided to take them. He starts scanning the negatives on a flatbed scanner and putting those images online and being like, I don't know what to do with this.
Right.
And then he just gets the steamroll. It reminds me of some other, like, even like a couple other documentaries we've seen where, like, the technology starts to be part of the story.
Right.
It's like the fact that he's just putting them on, I think, like, Blogger or like Blogspot or something in
Flickr.
2012.
Right, it was on Flickr.
Yeah, Flickr.
He put them up on
no
Flickr.
One does anymore. Really use Flickr because it got by Yahoo. But that's the beginning of how this story goes. And he's also the filmmaker. So the first, like, 10, 15 minutes, you're seeing completely through the lens this guy, John Maloof.
I liked, it reminded me when it first started, kind of remind me of a traditional documentary, because it starts with people that you're going to be introduced to in the documentary, and they all look very quizzical, and then they all say words like paradoxical and eccentric, because they're, you know, describing
Vivian.
Oh, yeah, the very beginning. The talking head.
It has
bits,
a very
Errol
Morris feel to it. Mm-hmm. It's like you immediately realize.
All right, so he watched the beginning.
Yeah. Well, I watched the first 10 minutes, and now. So you grew up. No. Let's get back
to
you.
I grew up in Chicago.
Yeah, right.
And she was a photographer in Chicago at the time I was growing up.
Okay.
And so when I saw the sheer. Volume of film she had in the storage locker, I was like, maybe there's a picture of me in there.
Of a young
Esther? She would just go to parks,
right.
And she would just take pictures, and she would take the most candid photographs because her camera was one of those where you don't point and shoot up at your face.
Yeah.
You hold the camera down around your neck, and it's down on your belly button.
Yeah.
So she would catch people off guard.
Yeah.
So she had the most candid photos of people who didn't know their photos were being taken.
Or it's just that moment where they see her. There's that moment of like shock or just engagement where they're like, oh, you're taking a picture of me. There's often that look in people's faces too.
Yeah, and that was back when like not everybody had a camera in their iPhone.
And it was a very nice camera too that she had.
Super nice.
The Prelinger, not the Prelinger. It's called a...
I don't know. Canon?
No. It's like a
cell phone.
Old school. Yeah, she had a giant cell phone in like 1973. Yeah. That would be kind of amazing.
Well, like, and my grandparents, you know, it looks like she lived in some, like, I guess Chicago in the 50s and 60s was extraordinarily ethnic, but like, I saw like some old like Polish women. I was like, that could be my grandparents in there, because like you know, the south side of Chicago. What part of Chicago did you grow up in?
Rogers Park.
Oh, in Rogers Park.
Yeah, yes. Like my parents would take me to Lincoln Park Zoo all the time, and I wonder if she was there.
Is Rogers Beach in Rogers Park?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. That's in the north area.
Well, it is a north area.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I don't know the names of the beaches. I just went there.
Did you grow up with a nanny?
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually,
many people
I grew
that
up.
Did.
I grew up with like the opposite, with like parents who left us alone.
Oh, right. Those kind of parents.
The anti-nanny. Yeah.
Did you have a babysitter?
No,
I was
didn't.
A latchkey kid.
Yeah, I was more on that half. I was like, you know, divorced parents, so two households, so it was like going back and forth a lot. Yeah, we didn't have a nanny. But when my dad and my stepmom had kids, they got a nanny because my stepmom had twins, so it was like. A lot of work.
Uh-huh.
Brought in this lady from like, she's like Filipino, and That was another thing that started to happen in there. Like, the demographics of what you think of as domestic workers has changed a lot. There's a scene there where they're going to, like, one of these families that had hired Vivian in the past, and now they have, like, a Latina, like, maid as, like, their
girlfriend. Right, whereas Vivian was a white lady. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was
actually
French.
European.
She was French.
Right, and that's another thing that comes up. It's like
that's a weird part of this documentary.
You start hearing her voice about midway through. She made a ton of audio recordings of herself. And then one of the guys that used to be an employer of hers...
It's like she knew somebody was going to make a documentary about her, right? Yeah, I feel like she was up to that.
Like, right, it was almost like when we did Ray Johnson's documentary, How to Draw a Bunny, and it was a lot of this stuff, like, who's going to, like, look at this stuff after the fact
right.
and try to, like, figure out the mystery.
There is a little bit of the fact that she kept everything, so it's almost like someone at some point is going to find this and realize how badass a photographer I am.
And she kept everything so, like, she was so meticulous about keeping every receipt from every transaction that she had ever had even in a tiny pawn shop where she bought a camera or something, that this guy was able to trace her roots back down to the tiny town in France where she was from, and he went there and talked to those people.
He does, like, a lot of, like, private investigation work, essentially, on
he's a good PI. Yeah. And just from, like, one photograph of her hometown, he was able to figure
steeple.
Out, like, the tiny town. It's like, I was like, wow, this guy.
Yeah.
He's a bit obsessive. Good. He's a bit of an obsessive himself.
Of course. Yeah. Well, I would be too, I think, if I somehow, like, haphazardly found a storage locker full of what turns out to be some of the best photography work in the 20th century. I was a big fan of Storage Wars when that show first started because, like, just the idea of discovering something valuable in a storage locker.
It's exciting.
It's super exciting.
It's like gambling.
Yeah.
Oh, so check this out.
They roll into dice.
One time recently, like maybe a month and a half ago, I went to an audition. I took a Lyft. The guy who was a Lyft driver, I told him I was going to audition for a thing, and he's like, oh. And so I was like, what else do you do? I'm like, I do comedy. He's like, oh, I used to be a doorman at the comedy store. He was also a Storage Wars guy.
Was a black guy.
Yeah. If you had him as a Lyft driver, you know you know him from the store.
No, Guam.
Guam knows him. That makes sense. Guam Felix.
Yeah. And he was on Storage Wars.
Yeah. So, and I asked him what to create.
He bought a storage locker?
Yeah.
He was on
the
TV show.
He was assistant with the other guy on Storage Wars. So I asked him what's the craziest thing he found in a locker. He's like, oh, yeah, dead body. He found a dead body. He's like, did that make it into the show? He's like, oh, no. They had to take all that stuff as evidence.
Why? They should show it.
No, they ended up being evidence in, like, a homicide investigation.
Shit.
It's kind of like Silence of the Lambs.
That's linked to your, like, storage unit. Like, you have a name linked to
that. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So I wonder, they found the murderer.
Let's hope so. Yeah. I don't think he followed up on the case. He was just
the
guy.
I would have followed up and been like, what happened to this murder case? Let me Google him.
Yeah. One of the other docs that Paco saw recently, I haven't seen Finders Keepers. That's
so
another.
Good.
Have you heard about that one?
No.
Let's take a break right now. We can talk about Finders Keepers.
Shall we?
No, let's take a break.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
There's one movie that she made that has a note in it. And it says, 1972 Chicago murder of mother and baby. Market where she found ad for babysitting job, which had led to disappearance and death. Then you see her walking to the supermarket. She's walking in the babysitter's footsteps. You see her walking to the neighborhood. Yeah, I just wonder if that's where the crime happened.
So Finders Keepers is a remarkable documentary. I love it because it's one of those wacky slice of Americana weirdness documentaries, which I love. And it's on Netflix. And it's about a guy who buys a storage locker in Georgia, Shannon Wisenhunt, I believe his name is. And in the storage locker is a barbecue grill. And in the barbecue grill, a human leg.
Oh,
and the story
shit.
Is about the guy who owns the leg. The guy whose leg it was previously wants it back. And it's called Finders Keepers.
What's he going to do with it? Not put it on.
You'll have to watch Finders Keepers. You'll have to be back on SupDoc and talk about Finders Keepers. It's really great. It's a really great documentary. And if you're out there, I recommend you watch it. It's on Netflix.
What about the documentary where the guy went into like the desert and discovered like went in looking for all those Atari games?
Oh no, I haven't heard about this one.
You haven't heard about that one?
Right? Yes, yeah, because like, they buried them.
They buried all the ET Atari games because they didn't sell well.
Yeah.
And this guy, he was like a world-renowned like great video game programmer, and ET wanted to make a video game, but it was a flop because they rushed the guy and said, "We want this out in 5 weeks."
Right.
He made like a very simple ET game mm-hmm. that really, you know, he probably needed more time to make.
Yeah.
But it flopped and. They buried it in the desert, and they all go out to the desert and dig them up.
Oh my God, that's amazing! Have you seen it, or you just heard about it?
Yeah, no, I've seen it.
Was it on Netflix?
Yeah, it was on Netflix. I don't know if it's still up. I forget what it's called.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. Let's get back for a second to this Finding Vivian doc. One thing I didn't realize it was nominated for a Best Documentary, which is pretty cool. And so I feel like there's a theme in this doc, which is like voyeurism. So mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of like, so you have a guy who is looking at this woman's private photography.
Parts.
Her private parts, looking right into her private parts. And then he puts those private moments and that private photography on display. And then there's a moment within the documentary where Vivian herself was paranoid that people were looking at with binoculars into her private uh-huh. room. It's like this weird, like this many-layered, like voyeurism thing that's going on in this doc.
Right, right. And you ask yourself, did she want to be discovered?
I think it seems like
She did.
Yeah.
But she almost like what happened is what she wanted to happen. She didn't want to be known while she was alive.
Right. I mean, why else keep it? Right. I mean, why? Why keep the film if you're never going to? But there is a part.
There's a reveal that is a letter that she wrote in French to someone who made some of her images into postcards, and they actually find. Is it the guy or is it like the son of the guy who she wrote the letter to? They're in France and they find the shop where she got these prints made, and then they translate this letter that she wrote where she actually wanted someone else to make her prints for her.
Yeah, because she was bad at it.
Yeah, and she
wanted. I mean, if she just had access to Craigslist, Craigslist came out 15 years before it did.
Right, right.
She could have found somebody.
Well, she died
easily.
In 2009. That was plenty of time.
Yeah, I think it seems like with her. She might have grown so embittered about the entire process, or that she didn't really like do the thing of like submitting. It's not like when someone's like a writer and they submit to the New Yorker or something. She didn't do that step ever.
Right.
She kept it super to herself.
Well, she's obviously a very complicated person.
Right.
She seems really smart. She's kind of the Brienne of Tarth of photography.
She's tall.
She's tall. She's blonde. She's like
right.
Stoic.
When you're tall, you just
she's
make
good
a...
with children.
She's good with children. She's kind of good with children. She. It's so.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Actually,
she's kind of not good with children.
Right. That's what I meant. Like
they interview some of the people she nannied for.
Right.
And some of these kids, they loved her, and some of them, they sort of told stories that were weird.
Yeah. One woman particularly had a very hard time with her.
That's a troubling story.
Yeah.
The lady that they talked to says as a child, Vivian force-fed her because she wouldn't eat all of her food.
Right, and she like involved like choking her till she would swallow the food.
Right.
And it sounds like some abuse, too, because she said that she would slam her head into a bookcase only at like age 6. There's a couple of people who said that she was just really mean. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of a friend who said that she had a very dark side to her.
And mental illness, someone else says she was basically mentally ill.
Yeah. Well, I think when you're a hoarder And I like some people were bringing up an assumption that some sort of
I concur with that. My parents are hoarders, and I'm sure they're mentally ill.
No way.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Wait, let's talk about that for a second.
That's why I had a storage unit, because I had this sort of hoarding gene in me.
Oh.
And I would, like, you know, be afraid to, like, give stuff away or to that I must have this. I must keep it.
Because I'm somewhat fascinated with hoarding.
Are you?
Yeah, I am, because I didn't grow up with it, and I don't do it myself. I actually have the opposite problem. I get rid of stuff all the time. I'm always purging. I'm always getting rid of stuff. So what kind of things would they hoard? Like newspapers? Or
do you
mind talking about this?
No, everything. They would like hoard like papers from church, like, you know, testaments and printouts, and just every printout from every church meeting that they went to, there would be binders full of it in our house.
Oh, wow.
From like 1982.
Catholic?
Evangelical Christian.
Oh, the worst kind.
Exactly.
That is the worst
fundamentalist
kind. You're right there in the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
The Northern Bible Belt.
And your family, are you Korean?
Yeah, Korean. Okay.
Yeah, because I was going to say, in my family, I'm Chinese, but like, there's hoarding in my family for sure.
Really?
There's
yes,
definitely like
Asians are such
either
hoarders or they're meticulously OCD clean.
Yeah.
Should I just step out of this conversation and let you guys?
Well, maybe
you should interview. You should compare and contrast.
Did your parents keep napkins from every restaurant you went to?
Or menus?
They'll keep, okay, we'll come home from Taco Bell and yeah, we'll have all those hot sauce packets. There's like
ketchup packets.
I've thrown away like 100 hot sauce packets from Taco Bell from the shelves.
Plastic forks.
Just everything. Yeah. Everything.
Now, were they immigrants? Is that part
Korean
of it?
Immigrants.
I feel like that's got to be part of it. Because with my family, I think it has something to do with like having to like leave a place very suddenly without any of your stuff.
Right, because they arrived to Chicago with nothing.
Were they
avoiding, so if they collect anything or they buy anything, they're like, we can't give this away. What if we don't make money tomorrow?
Is that hoarding? Hoarding has more of an emotional, psychological bent to it. That sounds more of like...
It's pragmatic hoarding, I guess. Or you're hoarding in the hopes that it's going to come in handy. I mean, like, kind of what your parents did with the church tracts. I would probably do that with like punk show flyers that I went to. I've got a huge archive of like flyers that goes back to the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I save like play bills from plays I go to.
You probably sell those on eBay.
Exactly. Well, that's what my logic is always like, my shit's at least cool.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I know. Our house was like so dorky. It's like Bible testaments and songbooks, hymnals, and Beanie Babies.
And, those are worth something. So how did they feel when you, if they're so religious, how did they feel about you going in the entertainment business?
Well, I didn't tell them. They
They still don't know
to
this day.
Know. They're going to find out on
I'm on a show called Family Guy. Don't watch it.
You know,
don't watch it.
Esther, I told you there was going to be a surprise in today's podcast, and there is. Ooh. Your
parents
Esther's
are here.
Esther's parents.
Right now, bring him up. This is your life.
Jim and Janice Koo. Come on.
Here's a binder of your eighth grade homework.
Here they are.
Do they keep like school stuff from you? Did you keep school stuff?
I wish I had more school stuff. Like, I don't think they have so much school stuff. They have all the Bible shit.
Right. Nothing like of their kids.
Oh, are you only child?
No, there's five of us.
Oh, okay, Jesus. So they were keeping stuff. Do the other people keep stuff in your family? Your siblings keep stuff?
Yeah, it's.
I call it keeping stuff. I don't like to use the H word.
I see you're avoiding the
term.
I don't like to shame.
Yeah, I see you're avoiding
hoard
the H
shaming.
Word.
I think hoarding gets passed down from generation to generation, and you have to make such an active attempt. It's like you're swimming upstream against the hoarding tendencies that you were raised with, and I now want to get rid of stuff. I want to have garage sales.
Yeah.
I want
Purge.
To I sell my clothes online now, and I'm like, I haven't worn this in 5 years. When am I going to, just because I spent a lot of money on it 2 years ago, it doesn't mean I should keep it.
No.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
You know?
You've moved to three different major cities in your life.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I've moved a lot. So at first when I moved from Boston to New York, I made like several trips because I had so much stuff. I'd accumulated stuff.
Right, sure.
And when you come from a poor immigrant background, you're not keen on like just getting rid of something.
No,
right.
You were like, I worked hard for this.
This bike pump can be resold.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have like three bike pumps and like a bunch of bad tires and shit. You know, I mean, it makes sense. But there's, I think what the I think there's collecting because you think you might use it in the future. Then there's hoarding, which is like it becomes dangerous in your home.
That's the one thing I gotta say for myself in defense in this discussion, because I've been thinking a lot about my issues. I just moved here from the Bay. Lived there for like 20 years. I had a storage unit there, and then I had to like get a new storage unit down here in
here.
LA. Yeah, and my girlfriend's just told me like, we cannot have all this shit in the house. Right. You need to like get a storage unit. And just part of me is like, I know it's only gonna be like $60 a month, but I just, what if I need that thing?
Well, my storage unit in New York was, how much was this? It started out $55 a month, and it just kept going up.
Oh yeah,
New York prices.
Public storage.
Eventually paying. Like $85 a month. And then also it was on the third floor. So I would have to get this huge ladder to get to the third story of the storage unit because they're stacked on top of each other.
There's not like a third actual floor. You have to just get up to the level.
You have to push this like warehouse ladder down the aisle.
That sounds so New York.
That sounds dangerous as fuck.
Yeah.
Was there a guy with like a biting on a cigar being like, watch
yourself? There was always like homeless people. Like,
Of course.
But then there was always those people selling sunglasses and hats and stuff. Like, they would be pulling their stuff back in after a day of selling those. My dad actually moved into a storage once.
Lived there?
Yeah.
Like, he
moved a couch and a piano into a storage unit because, like, my parents couldn't afford to get a divorce, but they were fighting all the time. And my dad was like, I've had enough. And, like, walked out and got a storage unit.
Wow. But he brought a piano.
But he brought a piano, and I think he would have still been living there till today, had they not kicked him.
Kicked him out of the storage.
I was like, "Sir, you can't live here."
So they split up. Your parents split up?
No, they're still miserable together.
Oh, good.
He moved back in with the piano.
Do they still love their Jesus?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Well, speaking of Jesus, Vivian, there's this weird turn in this documentary where she acts like a journalist, where she goes to the funeral home. Because this babysitter was killed.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She kind of is like shadowing the path of this other babysitter who was murdered.
Yeah, and
she's single white femaling her?
Yeah, she was.
Kind of. I mean, she's already dead at that point, yeah.
And I was thinking, like, maybe instead of Vivian wanting to be like a famous photographer, she would have wanted to be more of a journalist. Like, maybe that would have been more suitable for what she wanted to do. Because she was taking tape recorders into... you know, Jewel Osco, Dirty Jewel is what we used to call it. But she would take tape recorders into supermarkets and interview people about like Nixon and stuff.
Yeah, she would have a podcast, is what you're saying.
Oh, yes, she would.
What would Vivian Myers' podcast be called?
Leave Me Alone, a Dirty American.
That's German.
I know, I went a little German on it.
Leave Me Alone.
The Alps, what can you do?
And nothing really Myers.
But the question is, was she chose to be a nanny, right? She maybe had other options. And I think, like, there was this thing of, like, where people kind of looked down on her because she was a nanny. But I think she viewed it as, like, I've got freedom to do, I have a roof over my head.
Exactly.
Like, being like an au pair,
she liked the benefits of the job.
Yeah, she liked the benefits.
But there were some kids that she nannied for who loved her.
Right.
And eventually, when she was an older lady and wasn't working anymore, these boys who she nannied grew up and paid for her apartment.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were the ones.
I thought that was so sweet.
And they paid
sweet.
For the storage unit. And that was the thing in the end, or at the very, I guess, the first 15 minutes or so, John ends up getting in contact with those boys. You never see footage of the boys as adults.
Yeah.
And they don't do the interview, which I found interesting that they wouldn't do the interview because they knew her the most in her
later
years.
Maybe they got fat.
Maybe they did get fat. They also bought her grave site.
Oh, they did.
Yeah. In the ravine, which is also such a... at least the documentary takes so many weird turns, which makes it a compelling documentary.
Yeah.
But at least it ends on a very sweet note that like she got to be buried.
She was kind of taken care of by the kids who she worked for.
Right.
Yeah.
And they buried her.
And that made me think I should start nannying on the side. So
absolutely.
Somebody,
yeah.
I don't have children, but who's going to bury me?
Well, you should start taking photography like you always wanted and just get mean to children.
Just a bunch of your Instagram account will make you famous one day. That could be what it is. But they bury her in the strawberry fields where she was.
Strawberry fields
forever. They said that she was happiest there, or that was their memory of her being the happiest.
So then there's this other bit in there about what could potentially be her fake accent. accent, which I thought was really weird.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really strange.
That was strange.
Right, and she went by several different names.
Yeah. Vivian Smith, Meyer with different spellings.
D. Meyer, V. Meyer,
right,
T.
some people said she had a French accent. Some people said she had no accent.
Right. Well, the
it's like she would stay in character while taking care of this family.
Yeah, and then they talked to the PhD linguist guy,
right,
who is also really weird. It was
He's a little aggressive about his theory.
He was aggressive, and I think he enjoyed being interviewed.
Right,
and he was like, "You don't want to read my dissertation." Kind of like,
yeah. Oh no, no, yeah. It's going to be above your head. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want to read a linguistics dissertation.
Yeah, he's like,
for like just figuring out whether this lady had an accent or
on
not.
Vowels of yeah. French people.
Yeah,
That's probably a good reason.
But it's sort of answered in that she was born in New York, but she did move with her father split. We don't know what happened with the father. There's sort of implications that there is stuff going on in the family back a generation, like right. the grandparents, like her aunt. Was like would not or her aunt did not she was the only last living relative. The aunt did not leave her anything. The aunt left stuff to like friends, and then she sort of said like there's like I stay away from my family for good reasons that only my good friends know about. It's never explained. I think the implication in that, and then later in the doc there's an implication that perhaps she had been abused as a child,
right? Yeah.
And there's like, and the way that she is with some of those kids would sort of bear out maybe like there's another level, another generation of abuse sort of coming out in how she behaves with some of the people she's caretaking.
Now, Esther,
yep.
If you had to have a fake accent, what would you have? What kind of accent would you have? What would be your fake accent?
I would be like a Latino.
Well, Esther works then. I mean, the name.
Esther.
Yeah, it's kind of. How about
Mira
you,
Mira, Esther.
I always do a bogus Australian accent whenever I get a chance. It's the only thing I think I know decently, just from hanging out with a bunch of Australians.
Nice.
They also drop the C word a lot, so it's like something I have to remember not to do when I'm
cunt?
Doing that. Yeah.
Do they say cunt? They don't
do they?
Do they say horde?
They don't use the H word.
They don't use
so
the
much,
H word. No. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
What about you? What's your accent?
Mine would be like. Mine's more like Southern.
You do Southern like preacher kind of a lot.
Well,
right?
I do that. Yeah. Hallelujah. Yeah. Hallelujah. I grew because that's what I grew up in. Was fire and brimstone, evangelical. You know, put your hands up to the Lord kind of family. Like, because I had the same thing. Like, that's that Northern Bible Belt thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in all that weirdness, man. Speaking in tongues, did you guys have that?
No, but I did visit other churches who did, and I was like, oh, mine's not like that. We would pray more quietly.
Were you ever a Christian? And then are you a Christian now?
I used to teach Bible study.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Now you're a foul-mouthed comedian. I love it. So you were a Christian. You were like a Christian girl.
I was a hardcore Christian. I would ask people to study Bible. Like, you would get points for, like, bringing your classmates to Bible study.
Oh, my God.
And you get more points if they're white rather than, like...
of course. Oh, rather like, than even like, in that.
Yeah,
like,
Filipino, black, or Chinese. They'd be like, yeah, but that's so easy, though.
I guess some souls matter more.
God, that is funny.
Yeah.
What about who is the moon guy from?
Oh, Reverend Moon.
Yeah, Reverend Moon.
The Moonies.
Yeah, the Moonies. He was Korean, right? Was that
everything?
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. He's Korean from Korea, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Korean from Korea.
I think the leader of the one that I grew up in probably saw the Moonie guy and was like, "I can do that and make a lot of money and
so
get my ass kissed by everybody in my congregation."
So you like for me, I grew up in an extremely Christian household, but I knew as a little kid, I was like, there's no way.
Because you're smarter than me. I figured it out when I was 17. I was like in it, hook, line, and sinker.
I just didn't believe the theatrics. It was just there's too much like theatrics. I just was like, this just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah.
It seems like good Christians, if Christianity was real, people would stay home and do really nice things for their neighbors and not take credit. They wouldn't fuck each other's wives. They would like be Christian.
Right.
Like,
you were able to see the hypocrisy early on.
Yes, I was. Exactly. I was a smart little kid. How do you want to be remembered, Esther?
This podcast is ending not the way you expected.
I want to be discovered through my storage unit. I thought it was a huge accomplishment for me to close my storage unit because it was costing me $85 a month. But
that is a big move.
I am going to reopen one, and I'm going to get a huge one so that my documentary could be like a 4-part series.
It's going to be filled with thumb drives with images on them.
Opening
someone has to
Esther's
dig through.
That's funny.
Yeah.
What about, like, there's also, it seems to be, like, there's something in this documentary about privacy. And mm-hmm. like one thing that I was reading some reviews where people were a little mad at John Maloof mm-hmm. for evading her privacy. What do you guys think about
it? Oh, some of the subjects in the documentary say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's for entertainment, so fuck them.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, I mean, I think the letter where she wants to get her stuff professionally printed kind of gets him off the hook. Because mm-hmm. he's having a little bit... I mean, he doesn't address it so much in the process, but I'm sure over the years of him digging through all this stuff, he had to have some pangs of, like, doubt and conscience about exploiting her.
He discovered these boxes and then decided, I'm going to make a documentary right away. He tested the waters, putting him on Flickr and stuff first.
Yeah, that is true. It's just, like, I think there's... But would you, like, let's say you recorded hours and hours of stand-up material, and you never put it out, and you never did stand-up.
Oh, that was what was in my storage unit.
Was hours and hours of
yeah,
your stand-up.
Yeah, I have VHS tapes of me doing open mics in Boston.
Oh, my God.
Will they make you pay for the tape?
Sometimes, tape yeah. but I would tape it myself, I think.
Yeah. But if you
or if you bring a tape, they'll tape it for you, but...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Your open mic set?
Yeah.
Do you still have them?
I have a bunch of them, yeah. It's like, who has a VCR anymore?
Yeah, that's true. Boy, that would be brutal. I'd hate to see my open mic stuff. Like, just...
Yeah, no, I have boxes and boxes of it, but I don't watch them.
Did you, like, I used to wear a suit. Like, that was going to be my thing. Like, I would wear a suit when I did stand-up. When I first started stand-up, I was like, I need to be a suit guy.
Really? Why?
Well, I don't know, because it just seemed
I was
like...
always so casual, like jeans, a t-shirt, and sneakers, so I can, like, move around, and, like, I don't wear heels on stage, yeah. you know, like, I need freedom to, like, jump if I need to,
yeah,
you know, do a mosh pit.
I can see the appeal of the suit, like, kind of a Greg Proops thing or something, yeah. or just, you're classy, you're just, like...
But it's just a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, yeah.
And you're uncomfortable.
I was uncomfortable, and it wasn't me.
It's too hot.
And, like, my friends would come see me, and they're like, who is this character you're doing? And, like, this guy in the suit, and,
it's
like...
The Blues Brothers guy. Yeah. Yeah.
And your high top game is on point. You always have pretty sweet little high top.
Nice kick.
You always have nice kicks.
I fit into kids' shoes.
Do you? Is it cheaper?
I just discovered it recently, and I'm like, why haven't I been buying kids' shoes this whole time?
Oh,
I'm
damn, girl.
So stupid.
Yeah, should have been buying those, like, boys' sevens.
Yeah, fives.
Are those? Oh, wow. That's...
Now, did either of you see In the Realms of the Unreal? Do you know that
documentary? No, what is that one?
That's the one about Henry Darger, who is the artist who's also Chicago, who is another guy who his whole body of work is not discovered until he's dead, and people are going through his closets, and he made these giant-ass scrolls. Also obsessed with children in a very unpure way, very strange.
Really?
Yeah, but In the Realms of the Unreal, also nominated for... And Oscar, I think, the year it came out. I want to say it was maybe like 2007 or something.
Huh. I have not seen it.
Yeah, but that's another underground.
Are you a swimmer?
Chicago
you have like
person.
No leg hair.
Oh, thanks. Well, that doesn't show up on a podcast.
No,
just Asian. You don't have any leg hair either. So
no, that's true.
Because I shave. Happening.
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I guess my legs are more hairless.
When
than
we take our group photo, we'll have to get a close-up of your legs.
Of the leg hair.
We'll make some extra
we'll be like, whose
eBay
leg
money.
Is it? And is it Esther's or Greg's?
I know he has great legs.
Or
so
George, why did I just call you Greg?
Because it's okay. It doesn't matter. You want to
Greg
molest
Proops.
Greg? It's fine.
I do. I kind of do. Speaking of molesting, Phil Donahue.
Oh yeah.
Was
wait
on this.
What? What's the?
No, there is no. I just wanted to get back to the doc.
You wanted to just get Donahue maligned on
I
the podcast.
I used to love Phil Donahue.
I did too, man. He was great.
Was
I he?
Out
was
of,
good.
I thought he was out of Philadelphia.
No, nah, he's a Chicago guy.
He was a Chicago. Do you remember? Are you old enough to remember Phil Donahue and
you
his
know,
talk show?
It sounds familiar. Does he have a mustache? No, that's John.
He's got that big white hair, very like kind of like bloodshot like nose.
He would always do this when he talk to people in the crowd. People would raise their hand, and he had like this like one of the first like afternoon talk show things.
Yeah.
And he would run into a crowd and like dive like if they're in the middle, he would like dive over people. And then he'd go like
that and I think a lot of those people came because Oprah came out of Chicago too.
Yeah.
A lot of people came out of Chicago from the daytime TV.
Have you ever heard of Michael Jordan?
he plays golf, right? He's a golfer?
Yeah. Avid.
He's an avid golfer. I remember Marilyn Manson being on Phil Donahue.
Oh, you did?
And I remember one of the first times I watched Phil Donahue, and I was like, the world's coming
to an
end.
One of our old guests, Sam McFeeters, I believe he was on Donahue, or he called in to Donahue, and he got his name on Donahue.
Oh.
And ended up on one of the Born Against albums.
Oh, wow.
He was our past guest.
That's cool.
Yeah, based out of here. But yeah, Donahue is one of the people who hired Vivian Meyer as a nanny.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I bring
him
up.
For his kids.
He has four kids. He's a single dad, which I was surprised by. I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought he was married to Marlo Thomas.
But he was. That came...
That was later, yeah. So he has four kids.
Yeah, and she fucked Phil Donahue for a few years.
Vivian did?
No, no.
I was like, which documentary did you watch?
She seems to have like no sex life at all or private life at all. Yeah.
She's asexual.
Yeah, she was. Well, that's like the Brienne of Tarth kind of thing.
Yeah.
Came into like this.
Brienne of Tarth has like a lot of emotional things going on though.
She does. Yeah. She's complicated.
Yeah.
There's some wheels turning there. It would have been interesting to have seen video footage of Vivian. Like, it would have been cool to see. I mean, you can hear her talk,
right?
And you can see photographs of her, but it would have been cool to like see how she walked.
Because she's holding the 8mm. If you see her, it's always, she's a queen of selfies. She's got a ton of selfies.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah,
she was the queen of selfies.
She would take portraits, self portraits a lot.
Did holding you her camera. Guys have from the documentary or from just research or whatever? Did you have a favorite Vivian Meyer photograph?
You know, I saw it several months ago. I don't remember anything specifically, but
I kind of remember when this, I think in 2012 or so, he found the stuff in 2009, but he didn't really put a lot of it online until I think 2011 or so. I kind of remember just one of those like a Upworthy or something, like one of these websites being like, check out all these amazing street shots from this unknown street photographer. And I just put together that was probably her, because a lot of the photos of the kids looked familiar from that stuff. And they compare her work to Ouija and Diane Arbus.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of the Ouija stuff. We have a book of that stuff at my house. I'm also not, in general, a big photography person. Like, for me to notice that there was definitely a total distinct style, and I think a lot of it had to do with her shooting from below at people so that it looks like they're imposing, and from above.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like they were like towering down on it. It's because she's holding the camera down by the waist. But I, in general, like I don't really pay a ton of attention to photographers, and I'm not really familiar with photography as a genre. But you can kind of tell, even being like a layperson, you can tell there's something going on with these photos.
You can tell.
There's like a very distinct vision.
She had such a good eye.
But, and it must, I mean, it's so weird because she's not putting her eye up to the finder, the viewfinder.
Mm-hmm.
She's on her chest, so she must have this like sense of when to push the shutters, you know, like, and also none of her subjects could be moving. They had to be still, or they would have gotten blurry.
Yeah.
There's a couple, like the black kid riding the horse downtown, like under the L.
That horse shot is amazing.
It's amazing. And then there's that one of
compositionally,
the older gentleman, super wrinkled, like, but with this like really characteristic face.
Tim Roth buys one of those photos.
Oh yeah,
like the actor Tim Roth, who I try to do an impression of Tim Roth, but it's all in the head. But Tim Roth buys one of the photos, and he's talking about how he likes, it's like someone who's impoverished but has this sort of humanity coming through.
Yeah,
and a lot of it. Okay, so street photography as a genre, it's like they call her a street photographer because she's not doing like portraiture, like in a studio or anything like that. And that's this kind of stuff that if you see like, you know, like Vice or like Hamburger Eyes or these other kind of like, that's the most popular kind of, I think it fits with like internet level of like photography because it's all about like documenting like normal people like in their environment on the street, right? So I think like she's known for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more about like, it's about transcending class and race and other things like that. It's really, she's just like documenting people that were not getting a portrait done like at Sears, right? It's like people that didn't even expect to be photographed.
People didn't even know they were being photographed.
Yeah, I know. That's what's...
It's like documentary in and of itself.
It's like she was being a voyeur on all these people. So, yeah, it's okay to post all of her artwork because she was being a voyeur to them.
Well, there's that part, too, where the subjects didn't know that they were being photographed. It's a very strange...
Oh, yeah, she wasn't getting release forms from anyone back then. Yeah, that's not how it worked.
You know what we should do right now is quickly listen to our sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
She was aware of what was going on in politics and society at the time. She would bring this cassette recorder, and she goes to the supermarket, and she's asking people in line.
Well, what did you think of the impeachment? Well, come on.
My auntie?
Yes, you are. Come on.
I don't know.
Well, you should have an opinion. Women are supposed to be opinionated, I hope. Come on.
So, Esther.
Yeah.
Would you have a nanny?
What do you mean, would I have a nanny?
If you had kids.
If I had kids?
And money.
I mean, I don't know.
Would you give
Does this make you want to hire a nanny watching this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I would say.
Would you stay home with your kids if you had little ones? Or?
Well, I mean, I travel so much.
Yeah.
I would have to get a nanny.
That's right. Of course.
But I wouldn't want to.
Yeah. Well, it'd be weird. Like that's such a that person is like another family member at some point.
Yeah, that's actually brought up in there because some of the employers really treat her like they're her friends or they're more
they
than
really
just
liked
employer.
Her.
Yeah, some of them really liked her.
Some of the families were really nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure a bunch that didn't want to be interviewed, like didn't want to say anything, good or bad.
Oh, that's a good point. The people they probably tracked down. That they didn't interview.
Yeah,
I grew up with. Like, not nannies, because I feel like that's a different connotation, but I certainly had babysitters that stayed the night, and they were just horrid, because we had a state mental hospital that my dad would get babysitters from.
Okay, tell us what.
That is true, man.
Really?
Like, he would just put up a post on the wall there.
I don't know, because I'm the youngest of six. I don't know how he found them, but we had one named Betty that was mean, and she was from the mental institution.
Yeah.
And I remember once she put something, this is kind of sad, but she put like a glass popcorn bowl on the oven and exploded.
Oh, geez.
And she like started crying. Oh. And
maybe a plastic bowl.
It was glass.
Oh, wow.
It was heated up and, geez.
She was trying to heat up popcorn in a glass bowl.
Okay. My aunt did that with plastic, and it all melted.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, that's just weird that people would think that
she didn't get shards of glass in her eye. Or anything?
I was too young. I was like probably 4 or 5, but I remember her crying and like sitting and rocking in the corner. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I have to help her somehow. Yeah. Like, because she was obviously.
She was a codependent babysitter?
It's really weird. But she ended up coming to my dad's funeral.
Oh.
When my dad died, like, 10 years
with
ago.
With a big container of those tri popcorns.
With popcorn! Oh, Esther, that's why I love you. But no, she showed up. It was random. Betty showed up at my dad's funeral, and it was like, she looked the same.
What is the etiquette for when you should go to somebody's funeral?
I think if you love them, or if you hate them too. I mean, there's that. You're like, fuck you. I'm glad you're gone. Or like, I love you. You know?
Did you have babysitters growing up? And no one babysat you guys?
We were unattended and neglected.
The oldest kid was kind of in charge. Was it one of those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would be given the reins of the household.
And do you have a good relationship with your parents now?
No.
Oh, okay. Because they're here.
I've been through years of therapy.
Got it.
And I wrote a letter to my parents.
Oh, good.
And my therapist was like, okay, we're going to do an exercise. You write a letter to your parents. Okay. And I swear to God, she said, send it.
Oh, my God. God damn it, Koo. You're the best. That's incredible. No. And did you?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the next week, she's like, I was like, so I sent my parents a letter. And she was like,
no,
well,
you keep it.
It was just an exercise. And I'm like, you said send it.
You leave it in a storage locker for them to find later.
Oh, yeah. My God. That is funny. Holy shit. I thought she said send it. Oh, my God. That is the best. I don't even know where to go from there. That's pretty fucking funny.
If you could say one thing, your parents on this podcast. No,
do they listen to podcasts?
They don't know English. No.
That makes sense.
I don't know if they listen.
I had a weird experience with a babysitter, I remember, where, like, we were, I don't know, it wasn't a bad experience with a babysitter. It was just, like, someone we had a couple of times, me and my sister, and then I just remember, like, a couple years later, her just, like, kind of wandering into our court, like, where we lived, and we were just, like, kind of playing outside, and she's just like, is that Yvonne and George? And, like, she had been in her, like, early 30s or early 20s or something. So I don't know how much later this was. She couldn't have been 30, but I just remember her looking a lot older and looking kind of sad and, like, just, like, kind of, like, coming by to say hello to us. And we didn't know her really well at all. So I just remember that being this really strange image of, like,
well,
what,
like,
the hell
you
happened
get
to her
when
in
you,
6 years.
When you watch kids, you get attached to them.
Yeah, I just watched the BoJack Horseman episode. Did you watch the season yet?
I haven't started it yet. Okay. Because the thing with that cartoon, if I watch one episode, I'm watching the entire season.
There's like one thing where he kind of is taking care of a baby, and it's weird because he's such like a cynical character, and then he just like you see him kind of melt with this baby. And I just like visited my girlfriend's friends have a baby, and we just went over there and had dinner with them. And like the kid was just kind of he's a little crazy, but I just really liked the kid. So now we always like talk about this kid. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Just like your relationship with kids, you just like kind of are seeing your own mortality.
It's
I think,
true.
Part
and
of
I
it.
Also, I didn't realize how much I loved kids until I dated someone who had children. Like, I love kids, man.
I'm glad that sentence ended the way it did.
You never, yeah. Anyways, so overall, I like this documentary. I find that bio.
I like the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I find that bio documentaries are sometimes kind of tough because you're kind of like, oh, okay. But then there's ones that take these weird turns like this one that make it compelling.
I mean, it's not even like a traditional bio in that it's not like, you know, kid stays in the picture or anything because you don't really have access to her anymore.
Right.
It's
and
all
the guy
about
who,
interpretation.
And the guy who made it. He did such a good job with it because he was so meticulous about organizing all of the negatives.
Those are fun shots.
And they made a perfect pair. They never met in real life, but he just made a great other half for her to showcase her work.
Yeah.
He has his own kind of OCD and his own kind of like second generation hoarding thing happening.
It's like you watch it and you're happy that this guy is the right guy to have discovered this storage unit.
Now, I did find one thing online about in 2014. There was another lawyer who knew about this case who like ended up like thinking that this guy Maloof was in the wrong. And he, on his own, this other lawyer who's not involved in the story at all, not involved in it, except he decided to go find a genealogy person and try to track down another living relative of Vivian Meyer. And so he tried to claim that, I guess the way that Maloof left it, he was paying proceeds to that cousin in France, the older cousin, I think Sylvain is his name. So this other lawyer who's not involved, he finds another relative and he's trying to claim that that relative should get part of the money from this whole thing. And so all these places that are showing her work and like selling her work, they have to like kind of effectively shut down for a while and they have to set up like an estate for Vivian Meyer.
And who gets the money? Because she never had children.
The money's going to the estate right now. And so it's just going to whichever relative the court ultimately decides. And none of these relatives are in the U.S., so it's really complicated because it's like outside the U.S.
So tough.
And one of them had never even heard of her.
Yeah, he didn't even know about this case at all. It's really this other busybody, nosy guy who just thought that Maloof had done the wrong thing.
Right.
And decided to stick his nose in it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's another
because she was
case.
Such a loner. It seemed like she didn't really talk to her family even much.
No.
Oh no. I mean, and it seems like there was implications that there might have been abuse or something that was like it going back.
But she did go. So it's weird. So she did go back to France, you know, to kind of I think reconnect with some past people, and then at the very end they do this nice like montage sequence of people looking at her displays
in Saint-Julien,
and then that old lady sees her husband.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so cute and sad. Yeah. It's at the end that it's kind of weepy, and then you see all the different artwork displays and stuff. But apparently now because of that court ruling, they might be taking down all of her photography and all the museums and stuff. because no one knows now who owns it, who owns the rights.
Who should own it, do you think?
Well, I mean, this really guy definitely question. Like put in a lot of work into it. Like, Maloof has put a ton of work into this. Whatever you think his intentions were, he's done. He's hired all these people to scan the work. He made this documentary. He basically said the first 2-3 years he wasn't making any money back. He only started making money back from the investment he put into it, I think, after this documentary came out. So he's definitely like connected to it. But I don't know who ultimately should have the rights to it, because she has no heirs.
I think it sounds to me Maloof. I mean, he discovered them, did all the work like you just said, and put this documentary. And I think he has her best interests at heart.
You think he deserves the money?
I do. Yeah, I think portion of it. He should set up like a Finding Vivian scholarship fund for kids who want to go into photography at the University of Chicago or something.
Yeah,
with part of the proceeds. I don't know, something like that. But that is not for us to decide. We are just mere documentary fans, and not adjudicators.
Well, I think this has like a lot. The film itself has a lot to recommend itself. I mean, it takes so many interesting twists and turns. It reminds me of some other films we've seen, like the How to Draw a Bunny one, and also just in terms of, there was another one I was thinking it reminded me of, but
something else.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a lot. Yeah,
something different.
Another one, also in itself as well. No, there's a lot I think going on in this one.
Yeah,
gosh, we didn't talk about that like slaughterhouse scene.
Oh, I think
she
blocked it out.
The kid who she has the most contentious relationship with, she brings the kid to like a slaughterhouse,
that's right.
And there's like a dead sheep that got trampled. I thought they were going to take her in to actually see.
Well, because
like, the cows
whenever she would nanny, she would bring the kids to somewhere. She didn't like staying inside the house. She loved going out into the public, into parks, into factories or whatever.
Yeah.
Just so that she could encounter more subjects for her photos.
And some of the parents were like, I don't want you taking my kid to certain neighborhoods in Chicago.
Including
which
the
I can understand.
Yeah. Like back then, though, there were no standards for parenting or nannying.
Yeah.
No standards.
I like how, though, that she was like, so I watched these cows get slaughtered and then some of the dead sheep. And then the next shot is like, here's my sheep.
Yeah, right. I love critters. Yeah.
Yeah. She loves. And then there's also her neighbors that she had in, I think, Rogers Park is where she was. And the guy with
the weird earrings,
and the weird
Fu Manchu, Fu Manchu mustache,
Fu Manchu thing that was happening, and everybody was like, every time she was in the alley going through the garbage, she'd yell at them.
Her garbage photos are great, though. I like those black and white garbage photos that she had from earlier.
Yeah, I certainly have great appreciation for people who are good photographers and good illustrators, because I can't do either. Like, I dabble in other things, but I certainly.
Well, even her moving to color was interesting, I thought. I mean, because her black and white stuff's so good.
It was like Pleasantville when she started masturbating. Everything turned to color.
Are we talking about Reese Witherspoon or her,
Vivian
Meyer?
The mom.
Do you have a hobby talent that you dabble in that people don't really know about, like music or anything?
I know
you play the ukulele.
I play music.
That's right. We've done it. We jammed.
Yeah, man.
You know what? I think I even have some of that, because I recorded some of those, remember?
Was it audio recording?
Yeah.
Okay, bring it to my funeral.
I will. I'll play it at your funeral. And I'll show up at your funeral in a trench coat, and I'll walk up to your casket, and I'll say,
Flashing.
Your move, Esther. thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
thanks.
Great to see you.
It was great to see you, too. Bye. Thanks for listening. You can find episodes of SupDoc on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please review, subscribe, and rate.
And you can follow us on Twitter at SupDocPodcast and online at SupDocPodcast.com.
This show is produced by Will Scovel, and our theme music is by David Siegel.
If you want to suggest a documentary or a future guest, please email us at SupDocPodcast@gmail.com.